Call this meeting to order, Health Social Services Committee at 1:30, and we have present three of us. We have Senator Dyson and Senator Myers over here, and myself, Betty Davis. We have several items to take care of today, but if you have cell phones on, we'd like for you to cut those off, please. And I will give you the order of how we're going to hear the bills today. We're going to take HB 310 first, and then we're going to do that one confirmation that we have. No one has asked for her to be online or to be here, but we do need to sign the form so we can get it back to the secretary for tomorrow's meeting. And then we have a presentation that's going to be given to us. At that time, then we'll do the last bill, HB 218. And that is prescription drugs specialty tiers. And that would be all that we're going to take up today. And we do have Senator Egan who's joined us. Thank you, Vice Chair of Health and Social Services. I also want to recognize we have Senator Giesel here in the audience. I think she has some interest in 310 in particular. The people that are going to present for 310, would you come forward? Vice President, since we haven't had this before us, I'd like for you to bring this bill up for us, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for Hospital 310 Finance, version / I, with attached fiscal note.
All right. I'll just object for discussion purposes and get this bill on the record. And we have Representative Heron here.
At least there is no fiscal.
There is no. That's fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bob Heron, House District 38, the lower Kuskokwim. Senator, I appreciate you scheduling this bill. First of all, I'd like to thank a couple of people. Liz works for me and on my staff for her hard work, the co-sponsors, the chairs of Health and Social Services and Finance in the House. But probably the most importantly is the leadership by a couple of senators. One's a nurse and one's a doctor. And their other day job is, of course, being senators. And that's Senator Giesel and Senator Olson for their leadership on this legislation. Madam Chair, as you know, the Alaska Immunization Program was under the careful watch of the late Senator Ted Stevens. And so the federal government was provided to us a full slate of vaccines to underinsured and uninsured adults. But unfortunately, in 2010, the federal money was at 4.3, and now it's at 700,000. So it's a time when Alaskans have to figure out how to do this Alaska immunization program. And of course, the legislation is just a temporary act. And over the next couple of years, the administration and the legislature will figure out what's the best way to have our own basically fully funded immunization program with some money from the state. Now, the Health Care Commission does not officially endorse any legislation, but they in their report, they ask that immunization rates supports a program for immunization rates that improves them to protect Alaskans from preventable diseases and their complications. Madam Chair, this legislation does not affect a family's decision to not vaccinate their children. But the beauty of it is if those few families choose not to, they do have the security that most other Alaskans, if not nearly all, Alaskan families are vaccinated. Their children are vaccinated, as well as the people that choose not to for both medical and religious reasons. Be available for any questions, Madam Chair, on the merits of the bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Cindy, you can have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I misspoke. There is an attached fiscal note.
There is an attached fiscal note. Did anyone have a question of the, yes, Senator Marr?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Representative Herron, for your presentation. We had heard the previous bill that Senator Diesel had, Senate Bill 144. What can you tell me, are they the same, or is there any differences between the two?
The changes between Senate Bill 144 and the House Finance version are different. Both bills that came out of committees in the Senate before it got to Finance were probably nearly identical to the House version that came out of House Hess. So the House Finance version includes essentially a list of, all the vaccines that a school child has to have, and plus on page 3, line 5, the House version has meningococcal, rotavirus, influenza, and pneumococcal vaccines, and then adds zoster, which is another word for shingles, on line 8. And then lines 9 through 15, it does give the responsibility and the authority to the commissioner to add vaccines or subtract vaccines based upon criteria. And then line 16 through 20, that is additional language, talks about if there is high-grade scientific evidence that indicates subtracting the vaccine from inclusion is efficient, that has been added, as well as line 19 through 20 is if there is something unfortunate was happened to our revenue stream in Alaska, that they would have the authority to drop vaccines from the recommended list. Those are basically all the differences between Senate Bill 144 that came out of Senate Finance, and this is what came out of House Finance, and that it did pass the House 37-0.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Other question? Here are no other questions. It will open it up for testimony at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, you are quite welcome. We do have Ward Harbor Holbert on the line to ask a question mostly, I think, but we'll see if he has a statement to make also. That's Public Health, Division of Public Health. Hello.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the record, my name is Ward Harbert. I'm the Director of Division of Public Health, and I appreciate the opportunity. I did call in to answer questions. The only thing I would add when I had a chance to talk about this issue before, and just to keep it brief, since then it's been reported that there are more than 600 cases of pertussis or whooping cough in Washington State, and about 35 in Idaho. That's more in Washington than anybody can remember in many decades. And that means it's moving this way. So the funding from this bill, as you all know, would enable us to protect the 25% of the kids for whom there are not other resources. And as Representative Herron noted, that really does protect the whole population. That's the only other thing I had today. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll see if there's any questions to come up after we take the testimony. And we do have here in Juneau, George, I'm not able to make out the last name.
Rainier.
Would you please come forward?
Madam Chair, Senators,
yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you regarding this bill. For the record, my name is George Rainier. I'm a physician who's practiced for a long time in the Anchorage area, and I'm presently representing a physician association called the Alaska Physicians and Surgeons. This is a multi-specialty large physician group in Anchorage which has dedicated itself to improving the access and care of the citizens of South Central Alaska. And I'm here to strongly support this bill. I think everyone knows what the reasons are for supporting it, but I'd like to emphasize that seldom do you have an opportunity to get so much for so little. With immunization, you have the chance of preventing illness, which can be very expensive, not only deadly. So this is an extremely cost-effective way of improving the health of our citizens, and it is the humane thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. And we have Michael. Is it Michael? Okay, I'm going to go to Laura Hudson. I can read that. Is there Laura Hudson out there?
We didn't want to testify.
Oh, you didn't want to testify. Okay, we do have Marie Darling here in Juneau. She wants to testify for AARP. Come forward.
My name is Marie Darling, for the record, representing AARP. And I want to say that we do support this bill. And as you all know, you have a letter from us, too, which gives you all this information. But from the standpoint of older citizens, AARP recognizes that, you know, providing free vaccines for adults is a good, effective public health measure. And we don't need to repeat what Dr. Reinier has said or anything else, but we support all that. From the standpoint of grandparents, of which we have many within our organization, and some of the figures we've heard that there are at least 5,000 grandparents raising 8,000 grandchildren. That's just a figure, which we can fairly well substantiate. But those grandparents really recognize that vaccines for children really is an important decision for the state leadership to make now when we're looking at the fact that the federal funds are not what they were before. And so we just want to say that we know that vaccines work and prevent costly illnesses, and therefore we just encourage you to vote aye on the bill.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions, Marie? Hearing none. Is there anyone in the audience that did not sign up that wishes to testify to this bill? Is there anyone online that we don't have? No. Okay. Actually, we've heard this bill, a similar bill, Senator Giesel's bill, some weeks ago, and we vetted it quite well, so we are very familiar with the bill. We appreciate the changes that you've made in your bill. That we have it over here. And I want to thank Dr. Reinier for taking the time to come down to Juneau to say that he's in support of this bill. It's quite important, and I know that this is one of the pieces of legislation that we'll feel good about when we leave here, that we were able to pass that. Is there any other people that wish to testify to this bill? If not, I'm going to close public testimony at this time. Is there any statements or comments that my members would like to make? If not, I'd like to have a motion to move this out of our committee.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for House Bill 310 Finance, version / I, and attached fiscal note and individual recommendations. Fiscal note.
Correct. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the document, and then we'll come back and we're going to do a confirmation hearings. And we're going to go now with the confirmation. And we have only one name that's on there, and I heard that she's online. She's Direct Entry Midwives. And she's Deborah Snyder. And Wasilla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you have a statement you'd like to make before us?
No, not at this time.
You're just here to answer questions or what?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if we have any questions. There was nothing given to me in advance. I think we're comfortable with what we have, but I'll call on my members if they do have a statement they want to make or ask a question of Deborah. They're very quiet today, so apparently they're satisfied with you. We do have to bring your name forward, and we're going to sign a slip that's going to be put before us today. It would state that we would turn your name over for confirmation. It does not say whether we would vote for you in the positive or the negative, but it will be turned in there. The vote will take place tomorrow. We want to thank you for coming here, or coming there where you are, and we appreciate that you're willing to serve. Thank you very much. And we'll pass the sheet around. And while we're passing the sheet around for to be signed, we're going to have a presentation now by Hawaii Alaska Health Information Management Society. And you can come forward and get ready. Everybody have the package in front of them that the presentation is going to come from. Okay, Bill, we'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senators. I'm delighted to be here today. For the record, my name is Bill Sorrells. I am the president of the Hawaii Alaska chapter of the Health Information Management Systems Society. My day job is the executive director of the Alaska eHealth Network there in Anchorage, Alaska. But today I'm here to talk about the what HIMSS can do for the state leadership and legislatures as an organization to provide some resources. And as we move forward, you'll understand just how large the organization is and what we can do for the state of Alaska. The HIMSS as an organization is a very large organization, but our vision is to advance the best use of information and management systems for the betterment of healthcare. What we are trying to do is find ways to help healthcare organizations and government, both state and federal, to find ways to best use health information technology in the provision of healthcare. And our mission is to lead that effort in the United States, but we're also a global leader for the effective use of health information technology in healthcare. So in addition to electronic health records and health information exchanges and other health information technology, we are the subject matter experts that federal and a lot of states leverage to help provide that expertise and awareness and education to healthcare organizations, government, and also our vendor partners as we move forward with trying to find ways to improve healthcare for all the patients all over the world. Just some information about our organization. We have 43,000 members. That's for the national organization of HIMSS, most of which are in healthcare themselves and government and a lot of non-profit organizations. We have a lot of corporate members and sponsors, predominantly from large healthcare companies, Siemens and Cerner and Epic and GE, and other large companies who have a hand in the developing health information technologies for healthcare so that providers in hospitals and everybody in the continuum of healthcare can find ways to improve healthcare for patients and try to lower the cost of that. We are a part of 90-plus committees, task forces, and work groups, particularly in the federal sector. I happen to be a member of some I'll talk about later. And HIMSS nationally, we have state and local chapters, of which ours is the Hawaii-Alaska chapter. I know it may seem strange to some folks, but although our weather and scenery is a little different, we share some very many common things as a geographically separated from the lower 48 in terms of trying to stay connected in healthcare, and so we work together as both state chapters to help organizations in our state and Hawaii through educational awareness and adoption of health information technology. Here in the state of Alaska, we have over 90 people who are members from all parts of healthcare, to include state government, hospitals, physician practices, and other nonprofits organizations, which I've been a member since 2000. We have 150 nonprofit organizations that are part of the HIMSS National, and our offices are located in Chicago, Arlington, Virginia, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we also have offices overseas, Brussels, Singapore, and Lipskip, Germany. Some resources I'd like to discuss today of how HIMSS as an organization can help the state leaders. We specifically have a policy guidance for state-level decision makers, and I've attached at the back of your presentation that policy guidance that we have with some information. But specifically, the policy guidance is a reference for development to help with the development of state health policy, executive orders, and, of course, legislation, many of which is trying to find those subject matter experts to help serve the state legislatures and organizations to find ways to craft the regulations and the legislation to best support healthcare by leveraging health information technology. There's no doubt that as health information technology matures, it does create some interesting effects that we have to try to account for in healthcare, specifically around privacy security. I'll talk more about that in just a bit. But our goal is to help streamline care delivery by leveraging health information technology. And there's thousands and thousands of what we call use cases where health information technology can improve healthcare for Alaskans, even as simple as electronic prescribing, where there's a recent study shows that up to 30% of handwritten prescriptions never make it to a pharmacy, particularly for patients who are discharged recently from hospitals, where they get discharged instructions to go get those medications filled so they can stay out of the hospitals. One of the problems is they get these hand prescriptions and they never go to get them filled, which they never get better, so they end up back in the hospital costing upwards of tens of thousands of dollars for a readmission and to try to take care of them again. And so we're trying to, as an organization, help the states and also the state leaders of how our organization can help implement and craft those policies and legislation to support the betterment of healthcare. We have specific services that we can offer that we can tailor for the states and the regions, specifically through our HIMSS analytics. It's a subsidy program through our national program. We can provide analysis, forecasting, and health information technology, specific information where it's used specifically. We also help provide guidance on protecting and supporting funding and incentive programs. There's no doubt that with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, almost $26 billion of that was set aside for health information technology incentives. Some of those are health information exchange programs, the Regional Census Center program, which is to help facilitate the adoption of electronic health records, and others, but it's a large chunk of the $900-plus billion legislation. We also help the states to help develop support consumer engagement, where we try to find ways to help Alaskans and patients get involved in their health care and help find ways for them to get involved by the advocating the use of personal health records, for instance, or allowing folks to be able to use the internet or other resources so they can go online and maybe print out a copy of their immunization record for them and their family members, which today is very difficult. Oftentimes the a person actually has to drive to a healthcare facility and have somebody print it for them. And then for family members, particularly school children of age where that's mandatory reporting, again, the time and effort to go away from their employment to actually go to a school and take care of that is a terribly inefficient process. But we're hoping to find ways and as an organization to help provide that expertise through tools, techniques, and resources to leverage those programs to move forward. We're also trying to help the states be aware through our educational programs and our expertise so that states can be aligned with the federal mandates of privacy and security, particularly around the Health Information Portability and Privacy Act, Accountability Act, HIPAA guidelines that went into effect in April 2003. The role of publicly funded programs as HIMSS as an organization, trying to help the states be in alignment with those public programs, particularly those federally subsidized programs, like I mentioned earlier, HIEs and EHR adoption program, all those around what's called meaningful use, where we're trying to help even the smallest physician practices to the largest hospitals become more effective and efficient and more safe in the delivery of healthcare by having electronic health record technology so that they can have the best information at the point of care when they need it in a form they need it in. And of course, our government relations and regional affairs area, we try to help the states as payers, providers, and regulators to help create workforce development programs, because even here in Alaska, there is a gap in health information technology specialists supporting healthcare organizations and hospitals so that they can be more successful, quicker, and easier in implementing electronic health records and other similar technologies and solutions. And so we as a program, not just nationally, but also the state chapter, trying to find ways to get connected to help healthcare organizations with these resources, let them know that there is indeed help out there that they can get. We also have a federal health community. We're very tightly aligned with our partners in the federal sector, particularly the Office of National Coordinator of Health and Human Services, CMS, and of course, the CDC. We work very closely with them. In fact, we have a work group, so to speak, where we have federal members, government folks, who are part of the HIMSS organization, and as we reciprocate the expertise in shaping of and making sure that whatever rules and legislation is created nationally for federally, that it's done with the physicians and hospitals and patients in mind, so it's done in a very relevant way that makes healthcare achievable and better for patients all across the United States, to include Alaska. Well, like I said, we are a global organization. We recently had our annual conference in Las Vegas, with which we had approximately 38,000 folks attend, including myself. Great conference. Get a chance to see some of the latest and greatest in health information technology being used, but also a lot of presentations are relevant, those success stories and best practices around the country where we can learn from others and bring those to Alaska so that we can help organizations be more successful in creating a good healthcare environment for Alaskans. And as you can see, there's other meetings around the country. Of course, the government health IT conferences in June in Washington, D.C. It's a great opportunity for state leaders to attend some of these conferences. Next year, we hope to have for the state of Alaska here in Juneau, a state health information technology advocacy day where we can, as HIMSS organization and also the Alaska chapter, can be able to provide presentations and briefings for state leaders so they can understand some of the services that can be brought by HIMSS, but also try to bring state leaders up to speed on some of the things that are happening in healthcare very quickly because of the meaningful use programs and those other associated programs. I just want to go over some of the current regulatory tracking that we're a part of. I want to go through these very briefly. Through the Center of Medicare and Medicaid, they have released interim final rule for electronic funds transfer standards. HIMSS is a part of those work groups and committees, and we have task force actually dedicated to help Medicare with that those rules, so we can make sure there's a very happy balance, so that those rules are achievable in the near future for good things. Recently released is the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking for Physician Payment Sunshine Act, and I can provide some more detailed information about these separately offline if you'd like. But we have a team that's dedicated to help facilitate that. I happen to be a member of the Nationwide Health Information Network Governance Committee, and also the Meaningful Use Stage 2, which was recently announced in Las Vegas at the conference, of how the Office of National Coordinator of CMS is pushing healthcare along to find ways to adapt further those health information technologies, particularly around electronic health records, so that more information can be available at the point of care when providers need it. Oftentimes, patients will show up at a healthcare organization, either in the state or out of state, at emergency rooms, and the ER has no information at all about the patients, and so they have to rely solely on what the patient or the family members are telling them. Most patients cannot give a list of their current medications, dosages, and times of days that they're supposed to be taking those. Through some of the rules of meaningful use stage use, stage two, one of the big things, it's very health information exchange heavy. It's no doubt trying to push organizations along so that they can be more mature in how they have information available at the point of care so they can deliver health care more safely, more efficiently, more effectively. Also, the ONC has standards and certification criteria for meaningful use, and I'm on also on that federal committee too. And these are just some other examples of where HIMSS is directly involved with the federal partners in shaping and crafting those rules around those policies, procedures, and guidelines that healthcare will have to adapt to in the future. Recently, HIMSS was a part of making recommendations to CMS on delaying the go-live, so to speak, of ICD-10, which is looking like it's going to be delayed till January of 2014. The American Medical Association also was a part of that, and our recommendation was that healthcare is not ready for it yet. And so it looks like that through our advocacy and our boots on the ground in Washington, D.C., we were able to help delay that in a very positive way. Of course, we also work very closely with the Office of Civil Rights around HIPAA and security and privacy, and these are just some other examples of some of the rules and some of the work that's going on behalf of HIMSS and behalf of the nation for healthcare in terms of privacy and security. But very quickly, I'd like to wrap up and let you know that we have a very powerful resource in the Washington area, in our nation's capital. Thomas Keefe, he's the senior director of the HIMSS State Government Affairs. I have his contact information available for you, and of course, you know, you can always reach out to our chapter to help answer questions, bring expertise, help facilitate analysis and forecasting that the state may need, and it's hard to get sometimes. But we have a very powerful national resource in our nonprofit organization as the Health Information Management Systems Society, and again, I've been a member for almost 12 years now, and it's amazing to see how quickly healthcare is really starting to leverage health information technology so that we can take care of patients better, cheaper, and with better long-lasting effects. My contact information is in the last part of your slide, and I'd be happy to answer any questions for you this time.
All right, thank you for your presentation. You know, I've heard a lot about HIMSS, but I didn't realize that we had a local chapter. So I've heard them say something about Alaska Warrior when I go to some of the national meetings. But I don't ever remember having any contact with anybody here in Alaska while we're here. So I'm glad that you're able to present this information to us. But one of the questions and concerns that I have, since you have a local group, do you do anything to help the public be aware of some of the things that they should, like knowing what their medical records consist of, particularly when they're traveling and taking medications and something might go wrong and they don't know what they were taking,
sure,
how they should carry those with them or get bracelets with it on it, or
yes, any this,
kind of things like that that you do?
Yes, and I appreciate your concern about this. And we as an organization not only are trying to look out for the healthcare organizations and the government, we're also a big part of consumer advocacy and awareness of health information technology. There's no doubt that electronic health records are very quickly gaining speed and momentum here in the state of Alaska, of which one of the organizations, as part of our Alaska Health Network, we are the Regional Citizen Center. We are in the EHR adoption business. But there's no doubt as people move to and from Alaska, having relevant health information available wherever they go is critically important. And my background is I was in the Air Force for 25 years, and so whenever I moved, because of the very advanced health information technologies that the military uses, my healthcare record was electronically worldwide available, be it in the field in Afghanistan or at home here in Alaska, and everywhere in between. But that's not the same for healthcare. There's no doubt we're trying to see and advocate having patients be involved, consumers involved in their healthcare. And the way you do that is making information and resources and educational awareness available for those folks as well.
Okay, I'll open it up to members. Do you have any questions or comments? Senator Dyson.
I'm sure I missed something. Do you guys do consulting work for pay?
No, sir. The HIMSS, the Hawaii Alaska chapter, we are a member chapter to help create educational awareness and programs for healthcare in the state and also for the consumers. HIMSS National is a nonprofit organization where if there is a request for specific subject matter expertise, reports, analytics, or analysis, we can, through our HIMSS analytics organization, can provide those resources at a cost, but we're not trying to grow the business, so to speak. We want to grow it in a positive way where we can provide those expertise where otherwise this isn't available in the United States.
Yeah, please, my questions are not antagonistic.
Sure.
Do you have any work you're doing, any one of the pieces here of your organization are doing for pay here in Alaska or for remuneration?
The HIMSS organization in the state of Alaska currently is not doing any for-profit or cost work.
Okay.
We have been doing educational programs at no cost, webinars, things like that, so that the healthcare can benefit from the information that we can provide.
And as a part of the health information networks, does any of it have anything to do with drug registries?
Drug registries, there's no doubt that this is a problem that most states grapple with in trying to build the drug registries and other registries that are similar.
Sure.
We help provide the expertise when asked upon on those best practices where they are successful being done, and provide that information at no cost for those HIMSS members.
I'm impressed, and thank you. It's a little bit aside from what we're here about today, but many folks are just really concerned about the security of health records. I suspect that we're not the only folks in the world that are that. Would you talk about that a little bit,
sure,
please, sir?
There's you know, a lot of folks, your typical consumers, and here in Alaska it's no different. When they go shopping online and they purchase things from Cabela's or Amazon.com, a lot of folks don't think anything about that transaction being done just because they trust the finance industry has done a good job to mature. In healthcare, however, when people start thinking about their information, their personal health information, electronic and being stored someplace or being sent from one place to another, there's no doubt it gives them the willies. And in 2003, in April 2003, when the privacy rules went into effect from the HIPAA law, I was a chief information officer at an Air Force hospital, and that was one of my jobs was to be the privacy officer for the first privacy officer. it is about awareness, and there's no doubt that there's the industry has matured very, very well in taking care of patients' information. Most of the time what people hear is on the TV is about breaches or where some information was being taken from one organization to another from, say, magnetic tape backups, and they were seized from a person's car. But interesting factoid, since the privacy rules went into enforcement in April 2003, there's only been one federal conviction on an individual for inappropriate use of personal health information. That's a good track record for the whole industry.
Or for the whole nation, like DOD.
Absolutely. And I got a letter from a company where there were magnetic tape backups recovered from a seized vehicle that my health information could be compromised. But those are definitely the anomalies and the exceptions, and oftentimes the media jumps on those. More often than not, the information is protected in very valuable ways. And as a consumer myself, if I ever have to travel someplace and I'm not with my 8-year-old daughter and she has to go to an emergency room and the parents aren't with her, I want that ER to have my kid's health information, particularly if she might have a problem, an allergy or something that otherwise they wouldn't know. And so I think there's a lot of goodness in very relevant ways where information can be available, because there's no doubt what we're trying to do is give the provider the information at the point of care that's timely and relevant and in a form they need it in that still maintains the trust of the consumers.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. Any other questions? We don't have any other questions, but I do want to thank you for coming forward. This is valuable information, and we'll be able to call on you if we are out of session and some special meetings that you might want to be involved in.
I'd be happy to at any time. Thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. We have one other bill to come before us. And Senator Keller or someone from his office here to present the bill. Yes. Madam, Mr. Vice President, would you bring the bill up, please?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 218, / version B, with attached fiscal note.
Okay. All right, would you state your name for the record, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the Health and Social Committee, Service Committee. Excuse my voice. I've come down with laryngitis. And for the record, my name is Janet Ogan. I'm staff to Representative Keller and also the Health and Social Service Committee aide. Before you today, we have House Bill 218, which deals with specialty tier drugs. However, that's not completely what our bill does, but I'll give you a little history on how specialty tier drugs came about. In 2006, Medicaid D decided to put drugs in a tiering. And if you're on tier one, you're going to pay about $10 copay. If you're on tier two, you're going to pay about, maybe 20. Tier three, up to 50 in a copay for your prescriptions. Now, when you get to tier four, it goes from a flat fee or a flat copay to coinsurance, which means that you're going to be paying a percentage of what your drug costs. Now, tier four specialty drugs are very expensive drugs. They're to treat people that have chronic illnesses such as MS, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, kids that have cystic fibrosis, hemophiliac, and others. So these drugs are very expensive. Oftentimes they do not have a generic alternative. So we are looking at very expensive drugs. They're often injectable drugs, drugs that they use for asthmatics that used to inhale. And so this is where we come in with this, the tiering of the drugs. I know one person that their copay went from $70 to $1,200 with this tiering of drugs. And the insurance companies have adopted this method of tiering of these specialty drugs. Like I said, what we're doing with this bill is that we are really only extending the notification time of the amount of time that the insurance companies have to give to their client or policyholder. It went from 30 days to 90 days. In all reality, I think Alaska state law says they have to give a 45-day notice, and so in reality, we're only extending it 45 days. HB 218 protects clients that have these policies to look for other alternatives to their therapies, other drug protocols or therapies, or to line up some other financial assistance if they are stuck with a higher coinsurance. So basically, that is what this bill does in a nutshell. I think we did extend the effective date to January 2013 on this bill. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them. And we also do have, I don't know, Senator Meyer, were you going to bring up this ACHEA? Oh, excuse me, through the chair to Senator Meyer.
I would appreciate that.
I'm sorry. That I know that there was a letter here from the ACHEA board. So anyway, but that's what this bill, 218, just covers extending the insurance notification period.
I'd like to recognize that our Representative Keller is now with us also. Would you like to make a statement before we begin to take public testimony? Or okay, you're satisfied with it? Okay, any questions from members at this time? We do have some people signed up to testify to this bill. I want to recognize that the Commissioner of Health and Social Services is in the audience. I didn't know if he's not signed up on anything that I have. Did you plan to speak to this bill, or you just observing? All right. He's shaking his head. He's observing.
Yes.
Okay, why don't we go to Eagle River? Brenda Robertson? Robertson?
Yes, hi. This is Brenda Robertson, and I'm sorry, I'm actually calling in on a cell phone from Arizona. My husband is here seeing a specialist, so please tell me if you can't hear me.
We hear you very well.
All right, great, thank you. I just wanted to give a little personal experience. My husband has multiple sclerosis, and he has been on the same medication for about 10 years. The name of the medication is Copaxone. It's an injection that he takes daily. Last June, we were called by the specialty pharmacy to let him know that his copay had increased. We were paying a $30 a month copay, and they called to say your copay has increased, and it was now $1,057 per month. We do have insurance. My husband works. He's still able to work, thankfully. We pay nearly $1,000 a month right now for our insurance and for our health insurance. And so on top of that, you know, we were notified that just for the one medication, his medical expense would increase another $1,000 a month. Obviously, that is a huge hardship on any family. The first thing that he said to me when he got the call was, I'm going to have to stop my medication. And my testimony today, you know, I appreciate that this bill to give patients 90 days notice, to me, is a great first step. But I do think that I would hope that Alaska would look at this issue a little more in depth to see if there's something that can be done about the entire issue of specialty tiering on expensive drugs. Initially, tiers were set up by insurance companies to give patients a choice so that they would have a choice. If they wanted to pay less, they could choose a generic drug, and if they, you know, wanted a brand name drug and they were willing to pay more, then they could take a drug from another tier. The problem with this situation is that every multiple sclerosis drug on the market today is in a specialty tier. There are no generics. There are no alternatives. So the patient with MS will either stop their medication completely and then deteriorate, or they have to come up with some way to pay, you know, another $1,000 a month for that medication. They don't have an alternative like the other tiers do. There's no generic. As a first step, my request, of course, would be at least give patients a 90-day notice so that they can deal with this issue and hopefully find an alternative. And any questions for me, I would be happy to answer. But I just want you to know from personal experience that what will happen is that patients with these diseases will have no choice but to either stop their medication, choose between their medication and their mortgage or groceries. I mean, we're not talking about a $20 a month increase. This was pretty intense. And thank you so much for hearing this issue and for hearing my story.
All right. Are there any questions of Mrs. Robinson? We really want to thank you for taking the time to testify on this bill. And we will now go to Juno. Is there Cecil Kirk present here? No?
Yes, yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I am Cecil Kirk, Executive Director of the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, or otherwise called the CHIA, which is the high-risk pool for the state of Alaska for those who are uninsurable. I have served with the CHIA since its inception in 1992, first as a board member and then later as and chair, but then later, more recently, in the role of executive director since 2004. I'm here to testify today on behalf of CHIA, which provides health insurance to over 500 individuals who are Alaska's most vulnerable residents who are not able to obtain coverage in the commercial marketplace. We are asking for your support for the establishment of a children's reinsurance program, which will help solve an immediate problem and provide year-round access to health insurance for children under the age of 19. And I might add that this would come through some amendments that I understand Representative Keller has drafted. The ACHIA Board and the Division of Insurance have been wrestling with the fact that there are no child-only health insurance policies currently available for purchase in Alaska. This problem has arisen in part from federal health care reform, which requires insurers to provide coverage to kids with guarantee issue and no pre-existing condition exclusions or limits. Given that there are no child-only policies available, we believe this problem needs to be changed immediately. I might say that we recognized this back a year ago and have been talking about it on the board, at the board meetings since then, trying to figure out a way to deal with this. The ACHIA is ready to take on this reinsurance function. We would do it through a reinsurance function, which would be simple. It's a proven solution that will allow health insurers to start selling coverage immediately to kids under age 19. The reinsurance program would allow insurers to spread the risk of enrolling high-cost children across the entire marketplace, just just as they do now with the uninsurables who can apply for insurance but are turned down. And it will result in premium stability for individuals and families in Alaska. I might add that the problem here is that the TIA can only take on people who have a clear pre-existing condition that is on a list of conditions or have been turned down for health insurance by a carrier. Since no one is offering coverage in the state at the current time to children under the age of 19, they can't be turned down. Therefore, we've caught in a catch-22. We know that there are children out there that would be eligible, but because they can't be turned down, we can't take them to our eligibility rules. In closing, the ATIA board sees an unmet need with respect to children being able to obtain critical child-only coverage in the state, and current ATIA statutes do not allow the ATIA to help remedy this problem. The proposal before you will allow ATIA to fulfill this role immediately under the direction of the Division of Insurance. We look forward to working with you, state agencies, and insurers on this solution. Thank you for consideration. And I would be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't have any amendments before me. I would like for Senator Representative Keller to come forward if he has or if he's going to be making any recommendations. Based upon what you said you wanted to add as an amendment to this bill, I was wondering if it could be done. It's such a tight title on here. It says an act prohibiting an insurer from using a drug formulary system of specialty tiers. I don't know how that would fit into that. You want to speak to that, Representative Keller? Or are you planning on bringing an amendment to?
Yeah, as I understand it, this bill was identified as a carrier to solve a solution that solve a problem, provide a solution for a problem for currently underinsured children, child-only policy. And as far as the details of the amendment and everything, I believe maybe somebody on your committee there's been work on this. I said yes, I'm open to it, but I frankly don't know all the details, and I would. Appreciate if you'd let my staff maybe add to my ignorance. I mean, no, take mitigate my ignorance. How's that? Give me some better information.
Well, excuse me. I did have our legal services give an opinion on this that's being passed out currently, and it would call for a change, excuse me.
I was speaking to her, not you.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You may go.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, excuse me. I did speak to our legal service department about this, and they said it would have to have a title change.
That's what I see, that's what I just said.
Yes, yes.
So if all these things had to happen to this bill, and you knew that we were bringing this bill forward, no one has said anything to me, so I have not prepared to move forward because I haven't heard from anyone.
Okay.
And so I was hoping that we were going to be able to take action on this bill, but apparently you are not ready for action to be taken on this bill. You want something else to be done. And at this point, I will take the rest of the public testimony if you want me to do that, but I don't know where I go from there. Other than to say that the bill be heard at a later time.
Madam Chair, I do offer my apologies for not being ahead of this. There's been a lot going on. But I would also, if you are taking testimony, I would very much appreciate it. And I would like it if you would hear the Division of Insurance from them. Linda Hall's in the room. And I think she will throw a lot of light on what this is all about.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Representative Keller, is it your intention at this late in the game to take an amendment to this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Dyson, that is just fine with me, yes. I'm okay with that.
Brief at ease?
Sure.
Do you want me to have it at ease? You
yes.
Can't
have
it at
the
meeting.
Please.
Right. You can't call it at ease on my meeting.
That'll
I'm calling it at ease then.
That'll send the bill back.
And we will continue with the, thank you. We'll continue with the testimony. Marilyn, are you still online there? Marilyn Caspar?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I do. Did you wish to speak to this bill?
I do.
You may.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Marilyn Caspar. I am a volunteer board member with the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, ACHIA, and I also am the, in my day job, I am the CEO of the Alaska Primary Care Association. On the ACHIA board, I hold a seat that is intended to represent the consumers, the voice of the consumers. I've served on the ACHIA board for about 4 years now, and I'm here today on behalf of ACHIA to ask for your support of the establishment of the Children's Health the Children's Reinsurance Program. I would like to say I support the comments that were made previously here today by the ACHIA Executive Director, Mr. Bykirk. As board members, we believe a reinsurance program can help to solve this immediate problem in the Alaska market today and allow kids to obtain health insurance coverage at any time during the year. It's a critical solution that will benefit the youngest residents in Alaska and help them to obtain access to essential primary care services and preventive care, as well as the major medical and hospital services. Since there are no child-only policies available in the state, we believe that this is a problem that must be changed immediately. And we know that ACHEA can help play a role in making this happen by administering a reinsurance program for kids. It's a simple solution that will allow health insurers to start selling coverage immediately to kids under the age of 19, and insurers can spread the risk of enrolling high-cost children across the entire market. As a member of the ACHEA board, I'd like to ask you to help remedy this current problem in conjunction with the Division of Insurance and once again allow kids to obtain health insurance throughout the year. We'd like you to consider this solution by making a statutory change that would give ACHEA the ability to administer the program under the direction of the Division of Insurance. On behalf of the ACHEA board, I'd like to thank you for your consideration of this, and I am happy to entertain any questions.
Are there any questions? I hear no questions. I'll call on Jim Freeburg. Are you there?
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Freeburg. I'm the Advocacy Director for the Greater Northwest Chapter of the National MS Society, and I'm here to urge your support for House Bill 218 in its present form. Along with the Alaska MS Center, the National MS Society is in full support of House Bill 218. We think it's an important bill for people living with MS and other chronic diseases. We want to give them as many tools as possible to help them prepare for the high cost of their health care, and we think additional transparency around the use of specialty tiers is one of those tools they should have at their disposal. Around the country, we've seen more and more health insurance plans use specialty tiers to place an increasing burden on people who have MS and other chronic conditions. And it seems to be part of a trend in medicine where more and more conditions are treated via pharmaceutical treatments rather than procedures and inpatient, outpatient care. And it's something that insurance companies are slow to catch up on. And so their coverage for pharmaceutical benefits are a little lower and less generous than we usually see for traditional inpatient, outpatient benefits. So while we hope that insurers will provide additional coverage for pharmaceutical benefits, in the meantime, we hope there can at least be additional transparency around the use of this this phenomenon. So we would prefer an outright ban on specialty tiers, but we think that's somewhat unrealistic at this time. And in the meantime, we do encourage your support for House Bill 218. We've seen other states have outlawed the use of specialty tiers. We'd be happy to talk to you more about that if that's of interest to any of the committee members. And I'm happy to answer questions if you have any about how this might work in Alaska or our experience in other states.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Here, none. I know that we have Linda Hall. You were not going to make a statement. You were just here to answer questions. Are you there, Linda?
I'm here.
Oh, you're here?
I'm here.
You're right there in front of me. I don't see very well, so you do you want to speak? Are you just here to answer
questions?
Okay. She's only here for questions, and so I'm going to close public testimony at this time, and I'm going to ask the chair of the sponsor of this bill to come back forward, please, at this time. And my statement that I'm going to make is that I would love to accommodate the people what they want to do for the children's part of that bill. It's something that needs to be done. I don't see how we can get it done and get this bill out. I would like to see the tiers go forward. And so I don't have a meeting scheduled for Wednesday. I know that you can turn a bill around in 24 hours, but it means that I'm going to do it Wednesday. I turn it around. I don't have another meeting scheduled. I usually don't meet on Friday. I could have one on Friday. I prefer not to have an amendment to this bill that's going to hold the bill up. It takes two-third votes in order to have a title change. I'm not sure if I can get that two-third vote to do that. Rather than just hold your bill back, from my standpoint, I would prefer not to do it. But it's your bill, and you can decide what you want to do at this time.
I would follow your lead.
Madam Chair, no, I really am grateful for your consideration and not stopping this bill. This is an important bill, so please proceed as you intend here with no amendments.
Okay. I don't know if my members that are left want to have a statement of any kind. If not, they're going to say it's okay for me to say that we are not going to accept an amendment at this time. And this is the only committee of referral. I don't think there's no need for us to call this bill back, and I would like to move it out of my committee today. I do have three people here, and it can be done with the three people if you agree.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 218, version /B, and attach fiscal note to the next committee of referral, and provide individual recommendations.
All right, thank you. Hear no objection to that, so ordered, and that completes our agenda for today, and thank you very much for being here, and we'll adjourn at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.